everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Turning the World Upside Down, right after this. You know, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe these concepts don't even know who it was that originated them. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural forces that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood can be strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Well, now listen to this little blurb of science. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report. And it made that surprising statement. The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. And scientists who have been studying the sun have been watching for over 100 years now, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, which equals 5 feet per hour, then that totals 1% per millennium. Now, if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And if we go back just 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth 93 million miles in diameter. Now, as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the extinction of the dinosaurs? Can you remember that, boys and girls? Wasn't that 65 million years ago? And 20 million years ago, the sun was how big? 93 million miles in diameter. And you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist now to do the math on these kinds of pseudoscientific lies. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And it's one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that I conduct here twice a year at Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to my website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about turning the world right side up or upside down. The scripture in Acts 17, verse 6, identifies the early New Testament evangelists, that is, Peter, Paul, James, and John, you know, the guys, the apostles who were going around teaching what they had just learned from the Messiah, who had just died recently at that time. And so they were going around teaching, and it so shocked people that they claimed that they were turning the world upside down. Well, nothing's changed from that day to this, because if you open the Bible and you start reading it, it'll turn the world upside down. Well, for you it will. For Christians it will. And I mentioned my nice Advent lady that wrote me a letter, and she said, the God I serve would never do that. And she was talking about Deuteronomy chapter 28. And I recommend to my students that they read Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, which are the two penal clause chapters in the Bible. It's the payback that you get for the violation of the law. And I had a daddy that was just like this God here in the Bible. He was a nightmare. And he just scared the living hell out of me. I'll tell you that. And when he would tell me something, you know, I listened. And I did it. Well, there was a couple of times when I didn't listen and I didn't do it. But then when he got through with me, then I listened. And then I did it. And then he didn't need to whip me anymore. He'd just tell me. And then I'd do it. And that's the ultimate end, I think, that this God has in mind here, you know, that he told us, and then we didn't do it. And then there comes a punishment. There comes a day of reckoning. There comes payback. And when he gets through with this payback, which is coming up, called the Great Tribulation, when he gets through with this payback, I think that all of us will be able to sit down, shut up, hold our hands, and do what we're told. It takes a little time, effort, and energy to do that. We do that with children. You know, you tell your child, don't do that, and then he goes ahead and does it, and then you whip him. And if he's not brain dead, he'll learn from that pain, that physical suffering that he goes through here temporarily. And he says, you know, that guy means what he says. And I learned early on that my dad meant what he said. We Americans, I think most Israelites in general, but especially Americans, we do not believe that God means what he says. And that's because we've been listening to preachers, and these preachers say, well, God does not mean what he says. For instance, when you read Matthew 5:17, it says, think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. The preacher says, that does not mean what it says. So, you know, we take a look at that, and he said, well, the law has been abolished and done away with, and so you don't need to follow the Ten Commandments. So when we read the Bible is upside down because of the perspective that has been funneled into our brains in Sunday school and church all of our lives until we finally grow up and get to be big boys and girls, and we go out and we get married and we have children of our own and we go to church every Sunday, and then we have a mindset, we have a view of the world, which is false. And the average American today has a false view of the world. He lives in the Katie Couric dreamland of media. And we believe what our politicians tell us. We believe Hillary and Barack and John. And hell, they may even believe their own press reports. I don't know. But most of what's coming out of their mouths is just pure, unadulterated lies. Hell, they even know their lies. Then they perpetrate these lies upon us. We know their lies. We know they're liars. We know they're lying to us. We love it. We believe it. It's because that's what we want to believe. We believe what we want to believe. So I thought it would be refreshing to take a look at reality for a change. Just, you know, reality is taking a look at the scripture. Now, I wrote down a number of words. Listen to these. Fierce, jealous, angry, fierce anger, jealousy, anger, fierceness, wrath, and a nation of fierce countenance. God, those aren't positive terms. That isn't something you're going to hear on Katie and Brian, because it's disconcerting. We don't want to hear about fierce wrath, a jealous God, an angry God, a God filled with fierce anger, a God filled with jealousy, anger, fierceness, wrath, who's going to send a nation of fierce countenance against us to destroy us. Hey, we don't want to hear that. But I thought I would start off here and point out, for instance, did you know that God is filled with wrath from time to time? You know, he's not always that way, but once in a while he gets kind of wrathful. In Deuteronomy 11, verse 17, just to give you an illustration. And when the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, unless you perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord gives you. Out in the western United States, we're suffering under a 10-year drought out there. Did it ever occur to you people out in the West that the fierce wrath of God has been kindled against you? Did you people down there on the Gulf Coast ever think about the fierce wrath of God when he sent Hurricane Katrina against you? We don't like to think of that, and the preachers don't tell us about that, but that's the story that you get from the scripture. You know, he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy when you practice the Ten Commandments. And then he gets kind of wrathful and fierce. Just taking a look at fierce anger in Exodus 32:12. I flip over here to Exodus 32:12. And I'll show you something here about fierce anger. 32:12. He says, wherefore should the Egyptians speak and say, for mischief did he bring them out to slay them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from thy fierce wrath and repent of this evil against thy people. This is Moses appealing to God. He says, turn from your fierce anger against your people. Now, you know, this guy, this God here, this little different breed of cat. You haven't heard about this guy with fierce anger and with wrath and fierce anger, that he's a jealous God. Did you ever think of God being jealous? When did God ever get jealous? What would he be jealous about? Well, in Exodus 20, verse 5, he says this. He says, you shall not bow yourselves down to them nor serve them, for I, the Eternal, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Now, if you obey God and keep his commandments, then obviously you love God and keep his commandments. And if you don't keep his commandments, then you hate God. And remember, last time I showed you what God said he was going to do to people that hate him. He said he's going to pay them back to their face. That was in Deuteronomy 7. And he says, and repays them that hate him to their face to destroy them, and will not be slack to him that hates him. He will repay him to his face. Now, if you want to get paid to your face, just stand by. Relax. It's coming. I don't want to get paid to my face. I don't want this guy to get after me. So I took a look at this one day, and I said, you know, I better change my ways. It's about time for me to quit giving this guy the finger and tell him to kiss off. Maybe I better sit down, shut up, and do what I'm told for a change. Now, the other day, I got a guy who called me, and he says, you know, Gordon, you're a lying hypocrite. You don't practice this law. I guess he took a look at some of my practices and came to that conclusion. And hell, I'm not even going to deny it. And he's probably right. But you know, you don't need to be concerned about me practicing this law. It's irrelevant to you, whether I practice it or not. Totally irrelevant to you. The relevance to you is that you need to practice this law. And you need to get this guy off of your hind end. Now, you can rest assured that if I don't practice the law, that this guy is going to come and get me. I'm fully persuaded that he's probably going to come and do that anyway. But Don't you be too concerned about that. You probably got that right. I'm a dirty, low-down, no-good, lying hypocrite. All right, hell, I already told you I was a liar. And you ought not to believe me. And I didn't come on the air and say, hey, you need to believe me. I told you, don't believe a word I tell you. You need to prove this for yourself. That's why I keep telling you the scriptural citations. You can go look this up for yourself. Now, you Christians, you know, you can't look these up here in the Old Testament. You're banned and barred from doing that. Your church and denomination, you know, they've already told you that the Old Testament was abolished and done away with by Jesus, the loving guy, you know, who came to bring peace. Well, for some of you, I mean, you know, if you're an iconoclast, you might actually crack open the pages of the Old Testament. Jesus thought the Old Testament had a lot of merit, and he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. He said that in Matthew 4:4. You Christians can read that. That's in the New Testament. Then I want to throw this one out for you. Did you know when he made that statement, not one word of the New Testament had been penned yet? Not a word. So when he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, and man lives by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, he cited that from the Old Testament. He cited it from Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. There are 435 of those direct citations in the New Testament that come from the Old. Jesus did not know that the Old Testament had been abolished and done away with. He should be thanking his lucky stars that he's got people like Billy Graham and Oral Roberts and Jerry Falwell to come along and straighten us out. He didn't know. He's dumb. Ignorant. Well, now, you know, Jesus never went to seminary. Did you know that? He didn't go to the Christian school. I guess that's because he wasn't a Christian. But fortunately for all of us today, our holy Joseph Sky Pilots, you know, they go to college and they get letters after their names and then come back and interpret the Bible and tell us what the Bible means. Isn't that special? And so they come along and they tell us lies. And we were told that in the scripture. You know, God told you, he says, I'm the God that cannot lie. I'm telling you the truth. Jesus came along, he said, I come here and I'm telling you the truth. I got the message directly from my Father. He said, if I speak of myself, you ought not to believe me. But I ain't speaking of myself. I'm just a messenger. I came here to tell you, here's where the bear does it. And they didn't believe him. And they finally killed him. They put him to death. And so I'm not a preacher. I didn't come here to tell you, oh, God, you ought to believe me and give your heart to Jesus today. Hell, I don't care what you do. No skin off my back, one way or the other. As a reporter, though, I like to take controversial topics and research them out and then bring them to your attention and say, what do you think of that? What do you think of a guy over here that's fierce? In Exodus 32, verse 12, Exodus 32, 12, he talks about his fierce anger. He says he's jealous. Exodus 20, verse 5, he says he's a jealous God. He says he visits the iniquity, that's the lawlessness of the fathers, upon the children. Children, little children, to the third and fourth generation. My God, do you know how much the third and fourth generation lasts? How long that is? A generation's 40 years. Let's see, 4 times 40 is 160 years. He visits the iniquity of the fathers in the Civil War upon the children of those fathers in the 1860s, 160 years later. Yeah, that's about right. We're still suffering from the penalties that were prescribed by God during the Civil War to this day, as I speak. Hey, that's a long time, 160 years, third and fourth generation, of those that hate me. And notice he uses that word hate. And he uses it quite often. In fact, the word hate appears in the Bible quite a few times. And God has some things that he hates. And he tells us very plainly, he says, I hate that. He says he hates sin. Sin is a transgression of the law. And he hates people that sin. And then he punishes them. And of course, this admin lady, she said, well, the God I serve wouldn't do that because he's kinder and gentler. He's a George Bush Republican. He's kinder and gentler. So I thought I'd come report on this odd God, this God over here, that he's not nearly as nice as you might like to think he is. And so he's got some crimes that require the death penalty. So I went through a number of these crimes with you the last time that require the death penalty. And I thought, well, maybe I ought to tell you about four or five of them that we've been practicing here in the United States. And maybe this guy isn't as unreasonable as we think he is. Now, I pointed out sodomy. Sodomy is a capital felony. The penalty is in Numbers 33, verses 54 through 56. The kicker is in 56. He says, what I thought to do to those sodomites is what I'm going to do to you people in the United States of America, Canada, and Australia, because you would not carry out my law concerning sodomy. You made it a national civil right. And I said, I wanted you to punish those guys by killing them. I wanted you to eradicate sodomy from within your countries, and you wouldn't do that. Well, okay, well, now we've got AIDS, and AIDS is in the general population. And AIDS is spreading around the world, worldwide. It's a sexually transmitted disease. Number one, we're getting our comeuppance just naturally, just doing what comes natural, and we're getting our comeuppance. Secondly, there's a penalty that comes down called national captivity, and that's caused by Sabbath breaking. So let's zero in on number seven here in my list. Remember, I had 11, sodomy, cursing of parents, abortion, witchcraft, bestiality, idolatry, Sabbath breaking, adultery, false prophecy, incorrigible delinquency, and usury. Now, there's 11 of the 24 that we practice routinely here in the United States, just routine. We just do it every day. Sabbath breaking. 300 million people live in the country. How many of you people out there keep the Sabbath? How many of you people out there even know what day the Sabbath is? And then how many of you out there know that there are seven elements, seven things that you have to do to keep the Sabbath? I would contend, number one, that most people don't even know what day it is. That's why they keep Sunday. And everybody that keeps Sunday, I would have to say, doesn't know what day the Sabbath is. Because if he did, he wouldn't be doing Sunday. And they can't look at a calendar and count Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and come to the conclusion that Saturday is the seventh day of the week. And that the Sabbath is the seventh day of the week. They haven't been able to connect those dots. Okay, that's number one. So how many people in America keep the Sabbath on Saturday? Well, there's a few million. But it isn't 300 million. How many million keep the Sabbath? I don't know. There's 5 or 10 million Jews in the country. And let's give us 10 million Jews. I don't know how many Advents there are, but let's suppose that there's 3 million Advents, shall we? So we've got 10 and 3 million Advents. Then let's add another million for just all the odd guys around the country. 10, 13, 14, maybe 14 million. Now let's take 300. Now let's take 14 rather, and let's divide that by 300. And that gives us 0.046, or about 5%. Okay. Well, about 5% of the people in this country know that the Sabbath is on Saturday. But that doesn't mean that those people keep the Sabbath. It just means that they know that the Sabbath is on Saturday, and they observe it. Now, how many of those people, that 5%, don't work on Saturday? No work. How many of those people do not buy, sell, trade, or do business on Saturday? How many of those people do not kindle a fire on Saturday or do their own pleasure? All right. And it's against the law for you to work, buy, sell, trade, do business, kindle a fire on the Sabbath, or do your own pleasure on the Sabbath. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 7. There's all 7 of them. 7 elements to keeping the Sabbath. Now, the guy that works for the utility company or the policeman or the fireman says, well, I have to work on Saturday. You know, there's fires on Saturday. Well, there wouldn't be any fires on Saturday if everybody kept the Sabbath. Now, the reason for that is that we all have guardian angels. And when you have a fire, then that's not a blessing. And one of your 33 blessings is everything you put your hand to do will prosper. Having your house burned down on any day of the week isn't prosperity. And the angel will protect your property, but we're not having angels protect our property, and we have fires. And we have to have firemen. The firemen have to work on Saturday. It's kind of a perpetual circle, isn't it? It's like a dog chasing his tail. And so we justify Sabbath breaking, well, because I'm in one of those kinds of businesses where I have to work. Okay. Well, you don't have to work every Saturday, do you? Do you ever keep the Sabbath on those Saturdays when you're not working? Do you go shopping down at Battlefield Mall on Saturday? Well, that's when all the sales are. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's when all the sales are. That's when they hold all the auctions. How about the baseball game? Isn't that a good place to go on Saturday afternoon? We should go to the baseball game, shouldn't we? Take the children. So, you know, when do we buy? When do we sell? When do we trade? When do we do business? Saturday. And it's the world's number one business day. Now, kindling a fire is akin to doing your work. You ladies over there, you have to cook on Saturday. I mean, you can't let your family go hungry on Saturday. So you have to cook. And so you're kindling a fire, and then you cook. And that's what that's aimed at. Or you're going out to the baseball game or something like that. Americans do not practice the Sabbath. And I would submit that the 5% that know that the Sabbath is on Saturday, I would be amazed if you could get 5% of those that actually practice it. So I'm not sure that out of 300 million people, we got 5% that practice the Sabbath. But even if we did, even if. Do you think that the nation is worth saving if 5% follow that law and 95% violate it? Because this takes you down to the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. And so God, he comes over to Abraham, and they're having dinner, or they're having lunch, I guess, one afternoon. And so Abraham, he asked God, he said, where are you going? He says, I'm on my way over to Sodom and Gomorrah. So what are you going to do when you get there? He says, I'm going to nuke them. And Abraham was really shocked. Here's sweet Jesus in the form of Melchizedek, and he says, I'm going over to Sodom and Gomorrah to nuke them both. And Abraham asked him, he said, well, would you destroy that place for the sake of 50? I mean, if there's 50 righteous over there, would you destroy the place for the sake of 50? He said, no, I won't. Abraham worked it down 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. He said, would you destroy that place if there was 10 righteous in the whole city? Would you destroy San Francisco if there was 10 righteous? And he said, no, I won't. They went over there. They couldn't find 10 righteous. And I think they found four. Four. And so they took the four that were in the city and removed them from the city before they nuked it. Before San Francisco gets nuked, the four of you righteous men and women living in San Francisco will be removed. God will not destroy the righteous with the wicked. Well, not this God. I can't speak for all the gods out there now. But this God won't. So So the four of you that are righteous in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New Orleans, he'll remove you. Now the rest of the people that are there, when this thing hits the fan, you know, are going to be left to your own devices, aren't you? Now, are you practicing the Sabbath? And the answer is, no, you're not. And what's the penalty for Sabbath breaking? Well, let me give it to you. It's in Leviticus 26, verse 34. So let's want to flip over here to Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. That's the third book of the Bible. And in chapter 26, that's the penal clause chapter. And starting over here in verse 34, he says, then the land shall enjoy your Sabbath as long as it lies desolate, and you be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy your Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you dwelt upon it. So when we Americans, Australians and Canadians, dwelt in our land, we did not let the land rest, we did not practice the Jubilees, and we did not practice the weekly Sabbaths. And notice the word Sabbaths, plural, plural. How many Sabbaths are there? 10. 10 Sabbaths. Did you know that? 10. 10 Sabbaths to practice. And we don't practice any of the Sabbaths. We don't practice the weekly Sabbath. We don't practice the 7 annual Sabbaths. We don't practice the Land Sabbath or the Jubilee Sabbath. That's 10. None of them. The penalty for that is national captivity. Just thought I'd share it with you. Since your preacher didn't, I thought I'd point that out to you. National captivity. And then in Deuteronomy 28:68, he tells you where you're going. Ethiopia, Libya, and Egypt. You're going into national captivity, into your enemy's lands. That's the survivors. Two-thirds of you are going to die right here in place. One-third of you are going to be gathered up and shipped off. That's a part of the New World Order program, by the way. So get ready for it. George Bush and company have a plan for you. They have an agenda. And they're going to execute it. And they're going to succeed at it for a short period of time. So I don't think, just looking at it pragmatically, you know, just trying to be honest, you know, as a neutral observer, I don't think God is being unreasonable here. First of all, he gave us a Sabbath law, and he said, do this. And we gave him the finger and said, no, we ain't done it. We've been here for 225 years, and we've been giving him the finger for 225 years, and I think he's given us about all the rope that we need to hang ourselves, and I think we have. And I don't have any hope at all that 300 million people are going to turn around anytime soon. I don't have any hope that 5 million people are going to turn around anytime soon. We haven't for 225 years. What in the hell makes you think you're going to do it in the next, you know, 225 days or the next 225 weeks or, you know, 225 days? I don't think that's going to happen. So I thought, well, maybe if I practice the Sabbath, maybe if I practice these 10 Sabbaths, maybe it'll do something for me. Maybe it won't. I don't know. And I could say this. If God says, you know, Gordon, you're a nice guy, I like you, but, you know, you didn't quite meet my standards, so I'm going to send you right into the Great Tribulation with everybody else. I'm just getting my just desserts. I'm just getting what's coming to me. I went down to Flo's whorehouse, made a conscious decision. So, you know, if God gets after me and he says, hey, Gordon, you know, I'm going to it's payday. I'm going to pay you back for what you did. I said, okay. My dad used to do this. So I'm going to whip you. Of course, I used to cry and whine and weep and wail and, oh, no, Dad, I won't do it again. I know you're not going to do it again. If you got any sense, my dad would say you're not going to do it again when I get through with you. And I'm of the opinion that when this God gets through with this in this great tribulation, when he gets through with this punishment coming down, if there's anybody that's left alive that isn't brain dead, he ain't going to do it again. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about turning the world upside down. And so when I come along and I say, you know, I think Sabbath breaking deserves the punishment that was prescribed. Now, I don't know whether or not Sabbath breaking really deserves the death penalty. I'm not the guy that made the Sabbath law, and I'm not the guy that enforces it, and I'm not the guy that prescribed the penalty for it. You know, probably if I was doing this, I wouldn't have a Sabbath day at all. And if I was doing this, I probably wouldn't prescribe the death penalty if you didn't keep the Sabbath day with me. And I'm a kinder and gentler kind of guy. I'm kind of like a George Bush Republican. But I'm just a reporter. And I'm here to report that the guy that did create this Sabbath law attached to it a capital penalty, death. And I'm, as a reporter, I'd be doing you less than a service if I reported to you something less than what the law prescribes. And it's a capital felony. 300 million Americans are violating that law every single week. They violate that law. If they're not doing it every week, then they're doing it every year. For instance, Advents call here quite often. And I, in the conversation, will oftentimes ask them, well, that Sabbath thing is pretty important to you people. Do you keep the annual Sabbath? And they'll say, no, we don't. Do you know about the annual Sabbath? Oh, yes. I've never talked to an Adventist that doesn't know about Leviticus 23 and the seven annual holy days. And with rare exception, now there's a few Adventists that do keep the annual holy days, but when they do, they get excommunicated. The Advent church will kick your hind end right out of the church if you start practicing the Passover or the Feast of Tabernacles or anything like that. They won't stand still for that. Now, they like to keep the Sabbath on Saturday. At least they observe it. Whether they keep it or not, that's another story, but they at least observe it. So that's that story. Now, let's take a look at witchcraft, because witchcraft is kind of another big one over here. Here in America, we have a day set aside. It's October 31st, called Halloween, for the commemoration of witchcraft. Now, witchcraft is strictly prohibited in the Bible. Did you know that? Witchcraft. It's a capital felony, in case you didn't know that. In Exodus 22, verse 18, and Leviticus 20, verse 27, witchcraft has the death penalty prescribed for it. And yet, here in America, we treat witchcraft like a religion. It's just another religion under the First Amendment, like all other religions. And I guess that makes all the sense in the world if you're practicing the Constitution, but I wanted to point out to you that this God is not a constitutionalist. So people will sometimes point to me and they'll say, well, Gordon, you know, you're one of those constitutionalists. And it's true, I am. But I didn't think that was a bad thing. I thought being a constitutionalist was a good thing. But the policeman, when he sneers as he calls me a constitutionalist. And this God, though, he's not. He's a king. He's a dictator. He's a monarch. He doesn't believe in constitutions. He's got his own law, got his own plan, got his own penalty, got his own punishments, got his own army, navy, and marines. And he just kind of does as he damn well pleases. He's like a gorilla, and where does a gorilla sleep? Any place he wants. And I don't think you're going to change this guy. And he's dead set against witchcraft. And you know this voodoo thing that you people down in New Orleans, you know, you got a lot of this voodoo going on down there? He didn't like that at all. And this Mardi Gras, that comes from witchcraft. Mardi Gras, and that's a part and parcel with witchcraft. I didn't like that. Now, you should have gotten the message with Hurricane Katrina. I don't think anybody did. There was a woman down there. She's on national television. And this Hurricane Katrina occurred, you know, in August, and then they have this Mardi Gras, you know, and the city is destroyed. And they ask her, well, what do you think about Mardi Gras next year? And she said, there will be Mardi Gras. And I was sitting there watching, that was Brian Williams, I think it was. And I was watching, and I said, evidently, this woman is unable to connect the dots. You know, you have just suffered one of the most hellacious catastrophes down there on the Gulf Coast that has ever been experienced by mankind on planet Earth. Not the, but one of the greatest disasters. It was a natural disaster called an act of God in law. We call that an act of God. It's beyond what the insurance company could have predicted or anything that George Bush and the Republicans could have foreseen. And it just overwhelmed you, destroyed the 23rd largest city in the country. It was number 23, just wiped it out. And I thought that was pretty significant. And there was a preacher down there, and he was being interviewed, and their church is gone, blew away, and they're having their services out in the parking lot. And he was being interviewed by the same Brian Williams, and he said on NBC News, he said, God's ways are just higher than our ways, and we just can't know, can't figure out why God does this, but we'll be stronger for it. We'll be stronger. I guess what he's saying is we will be stronger in our opposition to God than we have ever been before. We will practice Easter with greater vigor than we have ever practiced Easter before, and to hell with the Passover, and we will never do the Passover. And well, I got news for you people down there in New Orleans. You're going to do the Passover, all right. You're going to do the Passover, whether you like it or not. Now, that much we do know. What we do not know is when are you going to do the Passover? Before or after your destruction? Before or after? Because you're going to do it, whether you like it or not. That's what my old dad used to tell me. He said, you're going to do it. You're going to mow the grass. You're going to take out the garbage, and you're going to make your bed. Now, that's how much we do know. What we don't know is, when are you going to do it? Now, if you do it on time, you know, there's going to be rewards. If you don't do it on time, there's going to be some pain, anguish, and suffering. I suspect, and I'm going to make my prophecy. This is the famous Gordon prophecy. I do not believe that the people of the United States of America are going to practice the Sabbath or going to give up Mardi Gras and witchcraft. I don't think that we're going to practice these laws. I think we're going to continue on with usury and interest. I think we're going to continue on with incorrigible juvenile delinquency and false prophecy and adultery and Sabbath breaking and idolatry. I don't think we're going to change bestiality or witchcraft, abortion, or cursing our parents or the practice of sodomy. I think we're going to do all of the above with vigor. Well, okay, this is going to then encourage fierceness and wrath, and ultimately a nation of fierce countenance is going to come against us and destroy us. Now that's what I think is going to happen. And furthermore, I think that a few people that do change now, as we saw in Ezekiel 18, you know, say, wait a minute, I think I can wake up and smell the coffee. I think maybe I better make a change. I think there'll be more plumbers, carpenters, and electricians that are going to make the change than you're going to see theologians. I don't think you're going to find very many preachers doing this, but I think there might be a few plumbers, carpenters, and electricians out there, you know, guys that can still think and still got their head screwed on straight, that can put two and two together and say, you know, after having seen New Orleans, after having seen this drought out in the West, after having seen the economy implode, after seeing the Great Depression, you know, it's coming, you know, it isn't here yet, but it's coming. Now, when you people actually see this come to pass, I think some of us guys wearing blue collars driving trucks are going to wake up one day and say, hey, maybe we better shape up here. You know, in our own self-interest. Maybe the sodomy isn't all it's cracked up to be. Let me take a look at another one over here that really just gags people when I tell them. It's got incorrigible delinquency. Do you people have any idea what you need to do when you got a juvenile delinquent? Do you have an idea? What do you do with juvenile delinquents? Now, here in this country, when we get some kid, you know, he goes out and he hits an old lady over the head and steals her purse so he can have some spending money to go buy drugs. We lock him up. We send him off to juvenile hall. Even if he kills somebody, we kill him. We send him off for a few years, and then when he gets to be 21 years old, we turn him loose and we send him back into society. That's the way we deal with juvenile delinquents here. Do you know how this God deals with juvenile delinquents in the Bible? And do you know how he deals with parents of juvenile delinquents in the Scripture? But mull that one over for a second, because we've got a big juvenile delinquent problem here in the United States. I pointed out to you, I think, last time that in Phoenix, Arizona, they got drive-by shootings. I imagine you probably have in Cleveland and Seattle, Washington also. I've been out of the big cities for so long, I'm out of touch with reality out here in the countryside. But I just happened to be in Phoenix here a few years back, and in a period of 16 days while I was there, there were 14 drive-by shootings. Now, when I was a kid, I never heard of such a thing. And I had a 22. I used to take my 22 out on my paper route, for crying out loud. Can you imagine a 12-year-old kid today on his paper route with a 22 slung across his handlebar shooting pigeons off the power lines? Can you imagine what you'd do to a kid like that today? That wasn't juvenile delinquency. I wasn't causing anybody any damage. See, today you people look at that as juvenile delinquency. What do you call it when you get a bunch of pimply-faced punks together driving down the street shooting people off the street corners? What do you call that? That sounds like pretty heavy-duty juvenile delinquency to me. Well, in the Bible, God prescribes that you kill them. Here's what we do with a juvenile delinquent in the Scripture. Let's see what we got here. Incorrigible delinquency is covered in Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 through 21. 18 through 21. This is Deuteronomy chapter 21. Let me flip over there quickly to it. I haven't read this for a while, so I'm going to flip over here. And I had a paid professional, Holy Joseph, so it takes me a little time. All right, I'm at Deuteronomy chapter 21. This is Old Testament. You Christians can tune out. You can't hear this. That's why you've got all this juvenile delinquency. Because, see, you don't read the Bible. You don't read the Old Testament. And so you can't solve your juvenile delinquency problem. It says here in verse 18, if a man has a stubborn and a rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them, so then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones, that he die. So shall you put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Okay, let's think about that for a minute. I don't know of very many parents today who could take their child over to the juvenile authorities and say, look, our kid over here is a drug addict, he's a drunkard, and he's rebellious, and he won't listen to a word that we say. And we need to do something about him. He's an incorrigible juvenile delinquent. And then the probation officer should say, oh, yeah, well, we need to take him over here to the probation judge, and we'll try him over here. Yep, he won't obey his parents. Okay, now we'll take him out after passing sentence, and we'll stone him to death in the gate of the city, and all the citizens of the city will come out and stone this 15-year-old pimply-faced punk to death. When was the last time you had a juvenile delinquent stoning down in Phoenix, Arizona, you people in Phoenix? Oh, you can't ever remember having a stoning of an incorrigible juvenile delinquent. That's why you got juvenile delinquents driving around on your street shooting people off the street corners. That's why your juvenile delinquent problem is out of control in America, boys and girls, because you don't follow this law. And furthermore, you will never be able to solve your juvenile delinquent problem. And that's because you got your holy pilots and your skydivers over here, you know, your preachers over here lying to you and deceiving you. They never told you that the penalty for the violation of the fifth commandment, which says, honor your father and mother, that it may be well with you and you can live a long time. See, we don't follow that. Number one, we Americans do not teach our children to obey mom and dad. When I was a kid, children said yes sir and no sir. And it wasn't just my old man that made me do it. It was all of the parents. Ronnie Mitchell told his mother, yes ma'am. When a child was called, they said, yes, mother, no, father. Today they say, yeah. What do you want? I hear this all the time. What do you want? A parent calls, Junior, yeah, what do you want? My God, if I would have said, yeah, what do you want? I would have hurt for a week. I'd have had bruises all over me. I'd have gone to school with bruises. Marks. Yeah, that's against the law today. That's called child abuse. You people are more concerned with child abuse than you are juvenile delinquency. I say you got your heads up the wrong end of your anatomy again. Well, at least from the perspective of the Bible. Now, I'm not serious, you know, argue with your religion or your juvenile delinquency policy. I'm just here to point out to you the reason that you've got a juvenile delinquents problem. The reason you got gangs marauding around on your streets and you're locked in to your homes behind iron bars is because you don't practice the juvenile delinquent law of the Bible. If you did, you wouldn't have any juvenile delinquents. Why? They'd all be dead. Dead. Well, all of the incorrigible. Now, those that are correctable would then see those that are in or uncorrectable dead, and then they would reform. That's where I'm at. See, I took a look here in the scripture, and I said, hey, wait a minute. I need to reform. See, I'm a reformed adulterer. I used to go out and practice adultery. Then I took a look at the penalty, and I said, oh, my God, this guy's for real. This guy means he's going to kill little Georgie Gordon. I'm a pretty nice guy. I've always saw myself as being a pretty nice guy. Even when I was Sabbath breaking and going down to Flo's warehouse, I thought, well, you know, I'm a pretty good guy. Pay my bills, you know, pay my taxes. I figured, hell, I'm paying my taxes and I'm paying my bills, you know, I'm a pretty good guy. Then I got to taking a look at this and I said, you know, this is going to get me killed. I mean, you know, if this God has his way about this, he's going to get after me. So I thought, well, maybe I better change. And I thought, well, maybe I better report this so that some of the rest of us over here might change also. But notice I'm not asking you to give your heart to Jesus today and no alcohol's ever touched my lips. I ain't telling you to give up your Jack Daniels. I'm just telling you that, you know, there's some things over here that are unacceptable. Witchcraft is unacceptable. A capital felony. This thing of dressing your kids up to go out and practice witchcraft on Halloween is an unacceptable practice that's going to get you killed. I mean, you can do it if you want to, but I just thought I'd point out to you that just because your church over here is having a Halloween party doesn't mean that you ought to participate in it or that this God is going to put up with that kind of crap forever. Now, you've been told don't do that, and you people out there haven't listened yet, not much likelihood that you're going to listen anytime soon, but it seems like to me somebody ought to tell you that Halloween party down at the local church, you know, is going to get you killed if you keep doing that. I told you yesterday, I said, this usury thing making payments on your house and on your car over here is going to get you killed. This incorrigible delinquency, this letting your kid run around kicking and screaming and doing as he damn well pleases over here is going to get you killed. This going down to Flo's whorehouse over here, boys, when you get off ship, you know, is going to get you killed. Now, you can do what you want, but... And this sodomy thing over here, that's going to kill you. And cursing your parents and smiting your parents, that's going to get you killed. Abortion, that's another big one, you know. We practice abortion in this country. It's actually, in biblical parlance, it's called passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. It has a little different connotation to it. Penalty's the same. Death. I just thought I'd let you know that this God over here, he doesn't believe in this right to a woman's, right for a woman's choice. This God is very, very narrow-minded. He does not believe that you women out there have a right to terminate your pregnancy. Now, I know what you believe, and I know what you've heard, and I know what Gloria Steinem told you, but Gloria Steinem is a false prophet and a liar. And she's going to get you killed, ladies. Now, if you want to keep after this, you know, get with the program. But it's going to get you killed now. Now, you got a law over here that said, keep your knees together until you're married. Girls, keep your knees together. That's what my old dad told me. No, it was my Aunt Bessie, if you could believe it, Aunt Bessie. She said that she practiced birth control when she was a young girl by keeping her knees together. That was Aunt Bessie who told me that. Some of these old ladies, they used to have some real off-the-wall stories to tell. You know, you made your bed, sweetheart, go sleep in it. Birth control is done by keeping your knees together, girls. Now,
I just wanted to point that out to you because there's this concept going around over here that birth control is accomplished through a woman's right to choose because it's my body. No, ladies, you got that one wrong. You see, if you evolved from green slime, then I guess you could make a claim that that was your body. But that's not true. That's not true. That body that your brain is being carried around in over there belongs to this creator over here. He says, I made you and I own you, and I make the rules, and you sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. Now, you haven't done it yet. Not very likely that you're going to do it anytime soon, but just so that you can get your head screwed on straight, you do not own your own body. That's owned by somebody else. And the guy that owns your body says, he don't want you practicing abortion. He does not want you passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. So I'm just passing the message on, take it and do what you want with it. And we've got, God, I don't know how many abortions have been performed. We're doing, is it 2 million a year? 2 million a year, I think it is. Well, that's a bunch. And first of all, you shouldn't have got pregnant to start with. You know, if you kept your knees together, girls, you wouldn't have got pregnant to start with. But once you get pregnant, you know you're stuck. Now, you're stuck with that. And this rape thing, what do we do if we've been raped? You carry the baby to term, and now you got the baby there. Because there's another law that supersedes that rape. Now, the rape and the rapist over there, we need to kill that rapist. And that's another story for another day. But okay, I'm running out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, if you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet daily. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.